For more information on Ancient Dragon Zen Gate, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please visit our website.
Well, I was thinking about this and that I consider it an honor to for you to, like I consider tonight a consultation in a way, in that I'm raising some things that are issues for me and looking for ways to think about them and look forward to the discussion of it. So I'll begin with, so it has to do with novelty, and it has to do with boredom, and it has to do with routine. I don't know if you've ever had the experience, well, occasionally you see on TV shows or something, they'll do a take how people can do the same routine every morning of their lives, and it's just, you know, almost movement by movement. Well, my mornings are definitely like that, and some mornings I'm thinking, wait, did I just put the cinnamon in the coffee? No, that was yesterday. You know, it's like everything is so exactly the same that anyway, the point being that that has served me well also in my work life. I'm a therapist, and there's a routine to that and a continuity. And there's a lot of dynamic process within it that's stimulating. But sometimes the routine begins to feel stultifying or something, you know, or like I need us to break out of it, or, you know, it feels stale sometimes. And so, but then there's the sense of duty that has to do with a lot of the things I do as routine, and so sometimes I try to think in terms of this practice and some of the teachings, what it has to say about the whole issue of doing the things that are important, that are routine, versus breaking out of that sometimes, or creating our own way, or moving into a creative space some of the time. Can you hear me? And so some of this has to do with how to live our lives more fully. The other thing before I is just to say that when I was in graduate school, before I really got into graduate school, I worked in a research lab. And in this research lab, we looked at novelty, learning by 3, 6, 12, and 18-month-old babies. And we literally put electrodes on their heads, looked at brain waves while we were showing them pictures, you know, it was on a machine, and we would show them three pictures of the same thing and then a novel picture. And we were, you know, collecting brain waves. So I was more interested in the behavioral side of this, but working with a physiologist. And so but what was interesting about it is, you know, that they were showing that there is a change in our brainwaves when we encounter a novel stimuli. And so, and they would look at that, you know, in terms of what would provide that novelty for infants at different ages, what provided a more profound impact. But, you know, we now know that also that doing novel, you know, it's recommended as you get older. You know, one of the ways to avoid Alzheimer's or some memory problems is doing novel things. You know, take up a language you've never learned before. Take up something that is totally new. You're stimulating new neuronal growth. And well, I don't know about neuron, but you are stimulating activity where it wasn't before. And so I think about that because I think sometimes I know that novelty is good for me. And occasionally when I get it, I realize that there's like new insight or there's new awareness or I'm able to see the world in a slightly different way. However, it's sometimes hard to come by that because to keep the responsibilities of life going, you have to have routine. And so it's like finding the balance in these. I just came back from a week. I did a service trip in New York City working in Riverside Park in the daytime with a group of 40 other people and going to Broadway plays at night. And so it was novel and it was stimulating. And I've done this trip once before, 11 years ago. It's a lot of fun. Some of the same people were there. And it's a lot. It was a lot of people in my age range, 50s, 60s, 70s. And so it was also a chance to see how people live their lives differently, who are maybe at the same stage of life that I am. And so that was, it was interesting. And it also opens you up to the many different possibilities of the ways to look at, you know, like what are the values being expressed or the things happening at this point in life for people, like a variety of different choices being made, which I found interesting. And so I guess, you know, some of what I'm exploring is how much to follow our instincts and how much to keep the routine of things that we're responsible for. Where is the room for creativity or a change in direction? And where is it important to kind of focus on the day-to-day? An example of what I'm trying to get at, one night I didn't go with the group out. I knew I'd want one evening to be, we stayed at a youth hostel, to stay there. And so I was sitting in the lounge area. I dabble in watercolor painting, and I was trying to capture a scene that we'd seen that day. And using my phone to kind of, you know, keep it up so that I could try to paint this water tower that was on the Hudson River. Anyway, it was really pretty. So I'm sitting there trying to do it, and I'm trying to get the dimensions right, and I'm almost measuring and sketching it and then painting it in and trying to get the color just the right color. And this young guy comes up, and he was amazing, and he was an artist, and he'd been to art school and been making his living painting murals for beer companies and other, you know, companies on the sides of buildings. And he showed me some of his art. It was wonderful. But first, he really just gave me a lesson, and the lesson was basically you're allowed to have your own style in there. And you don't have to make it exactly the same pink that was in the photo or, you know, that I, in the camera. You're allowed to go off that a little bit, and you can give it your own style, essentially. So it's kind of like doing interpretive art versus trying to reproduce something exactly like what you're looking at. And that was useful to me, and we talked about it quite a bit. There's still a lot, you know, you still have to practice skills to be able to be creative. You know, he described ways to use one brush to kind of create that water tower. But the basic point was loosen up a little bit and allow yourself to be creative in how you're going about this, some of it can come from within. You can bring your own sense to it and not try to just do it the correct way. And so I guess that, you know, I think for me sometimes it's how to have a little more fluid, like moving into a creative space a little more fluidly. You know, I found I can be successful by keeping a routine, and I can keep it really well. You know, I'm pretty good at that, but sometimes life begins to feel a little stale, and I need the creative part of it. And so I've been curious in terms of, you know, it's like I don't see anything in the Buddhist readings that are exactly about this. And I've been curious how to think about it. Because often, you know, there's the sense of in Zazen, or like paying attention to what we're doing, and it doesn't really matter what we're doing. We don't have to be doing something spectacular. We can be washing the dishes, but the sense of being fully in where you are. And I do think that's part of this. And so I have a reading by Suzuki Roshi in the book Not Always So that I wanted to maybe use to open some discussion. You know, it's the middle of a chapter that he's written on changing our karma. To count each breath is to breathe with our whole mind and body. We count each number with the power of the whole universe. So when you really experience counting your breath, you will have deep gratitude, more than if you arrived on the moon. That's a previous reference. You will not be so interested in something just because it is considered great, or uninterested in something usually considered to be small. Still, you may be very interested in having new experiences the way a baby is. A baby has the same basic attitude of interest toward all things. If you watch her, she will always be enjoying her life. We adults mostly are caught by our preconceived ideas. We are not completely free from the objective world because we are not one with the objective world. Things change. For the usual person, this is very discouraging. You cannot rely on anything. You cannot have anything. And you will see what you don't want to see. You will meet someone you don't like. If you want to do something, you may find that it is impossible. So you will be discouraged by the way things are going. As a Buddhist, you are changing the foundation of your life. That things change is the reason why you suffer in this world and become discouraged. When you change your understanding and your way of living, then you can completely enjoy your new life in each moment. The evanescence of things is the reason why you enjoy your life. When you practice in this way, your life becomes stable and meaningful. And so, you know, I know, you know, this is talking about whatever we're doing in life. It's what we bring to it. It's how we're in it. It's how fully we're in it that that is important. And I think I'm getting at something about how that relates to following your intuition, and which can mean a varied journey in your life. Anyway, I don't know if anyone is following this or if it makes sense to anybody else. But there's something about how to follow your intuition, when to follow your desires, your interests, versus duty, and how that relates to this practice. So I wonder if there's any discussion or comments or thoughts. Laurel?
That was just a wonderful talk, Kat. It's so interesting to think about, because...
Thank you.
We have these forms in Zen. We have these forms that are totally prescribed in every way. They're supposed to be exactly the same. They're never, ever, ever exactly the same. Ever with one person, let alone among people. And it gives us the opportunity to explore all these things that you are putting forth tonight. So we are paying attention, and it's not routine at all. It's sort of thrilling because every minute is a different experience because we're paying attention, which is what we learned from Zen. So that was really great to bring that up, which I hadn't really thought about it that way before. I mean, I've trained a lot of people in the forms, and a lot of people are like, why aren't you going to learn this? It's like so boring. It's so not boring. Let me tell you. If you watch someone just learning something, so you were a new greeter tonight, right? Was it boring? No, right? It was terrifying. Because you weren't really on top. You didn't quite know everything. You were trying to pay attention, and every time it would be different. And so, yeah, very Zen talk. Thank you.
Thank you. No, I'm that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank you very much, Kathy, for that talk. Likewise, very, very interesting to hear. It brings up a lot of things. Interestingly, a lot of things that I tend to let sit into routine and don't think about so much. Yesterday, Pogetsu spoke a lot about wonder, which I think is tied in a lot with the routine. Something that I experienced, at least, with Zen, is this sort of profound ability to, what's the phrase, everything old is new again, that, things, very mundane things, like, washing the dishes, doing laundry, etc., I feel when I'm very aware and mindful of them, they have this just beautiful newness to them. I make coffee a lot, and it's like it becomes the most routine thing, and you do it every day, but just sometimes, just when I happen to, the planets align, and I just happen to be in a very mindful state, something as simple as looking at grains of coffee, it just has this wonder to it, and when things are wondrous, it doesn't really matter what they are, there's just this amazing intricacy to them, and it's just the way they tie into the world, and a newness that wasn't there before, it's ostensibly the same. So I feel like Zen just has this amazing power to flip perspectives, and in that way, our perspective relative to what we're working with changes, and therefore experience itself changes. I mentioned it all the time, but I love Thich Nhat Hanh, and one of the things he talks about is washing the dishes, and how he says I've been practicing that there are two ways to wash the dishes. One of them is to wash the dishes to have washed the dishes, and the other one is to wash the dishes just to wash the dishes. So sort of this like doing the thing just to do it, finding this beautiful wonder in things that we thought were totally mundane. That's been really, really helpful for me. So offer that.
Thank you. Thank you. No, thank you all for your comments. It makes me think about how sometimes my routine, it's like I'm in a hurry, and it's like I'm rushing through it, and it's mechanical, and I don't take time to look at anything. I'm kind of like okay, I got time just to do this, 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 blah, 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 you know, and it's like, get out the door. And those are not really pleasant experiences, and they're not ones where I feel attentive to what I'm doing. But the newness of things, finding it sometimes, like, you know, I went on this trip and I'm digging out invasive plants, roots, you know, and I saw a friend last night when I got back and who said, yeah, I thought about that, you're really getting good at this, but your own yard is a mess. And it's true, it is. And the same stuff does not seem interesting in my yard. You know, it gets mundane. It's kind of like, okay, I have some time, I should go pull those weeds, or I should whatever. But in this trip, I think, you know, with 40 people, after 40 people have spent a few hours, you can completely change a hillside. It's, you know, that's kind of inspiring. But so something, a perspective that sometimes wakes you up and brings you into the specialness of what you're doing, and makes it not just something to get over with quickly.
Yeah, I think there's an interesting tension between habit and routine, and it was making me think of monastery life. Not that I've ever been to one, but the whole thing is, from the minute you wake up to the minute you go to bed, everything is exactly just so. It's all scheduled. You have an exact way that you're doing everything, right? That's my understanding. But at the same time, everyone's on this journey to realize this novel truth that's so unlike anything you've experienced before. It's a total novelty. And so I think that's an interesting tension. And I think partly it's maybe because the more similar things are, the more you notice how they differ. Right? The more times you sing the same chant, the more you can realize the very subtle differences between all the different iterations. And there was someone, perhaps someone here will know who I'm talking about, because I don't. Maybe it was Suzuki, who said, "I couldn't tell you all apart until you got ordained, shaved your heads, put on the exact same robe, and suddenly, now they're all dressed the same, with the same haircut. I can tell you, you're all radically different. Whereas before, in your own clothes, with your own style of hair, you're all the same." Maybe
interesting.
That's a similar tension between difference and sameness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. No, that's neat to think about. Yeah, like in a monastery, that probably individual styles do come out, you know, in doing this thing the very same every time.
They stick out like a sore thumb because everything is the same.
Right, and so a variation of any kind feels a big difference.
Yeah. Maybe that's a skillful means to teach us how things are not the same. Mm-hmm. Right? A dharma gate by which we can realize.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And that gets into the, you know, so the other part of this is intuition, or like where is there room to put your own style on things? And that is a tension sometimes I play with, or, you know, like try to get the feel of.
I would take exception, or at least call your attention to the words "put your own style on," as opposed to "express yourself through," which seems, put your own style on sounds like imposing.
Okay.
And "express yourself through" seems like,
yeah,
joining with.
Right.
It might be more fun or easier to feel like you're entering into it rather than putting on, you know,
my stamp on it.
Yes, yeah.
Entering it through it, and you're still expressing.
Joining, being one with.
We keep using phrases that I really think are actual chapter titles, either in novels or in Express Yourself Fully is for sure a chapter title. And I think Use Your Intuition is another one. So I think there's lots more that maybe Suzuki Roshi had to say about this in other contexts. But I want to also encourage you to continue to explore, you know, expressing yourself fully. We can have a tendency to think that there's the world out there and then me, and or there's this form and then me. And we do need to spend time, you know, learning things, learning how to do something. But it's never really separate from this person who's doing it and learning it. It's the form is impacting you, and you're impacting the form.
You're shaping it as it's shaping you.
Yeah. So that everyone paints a picture a little bit differently. Mm-hmm. Because all of the causes and conditions that came to create each of us to be in the world and see the world the way that we do are then expressing themselves through how we're interacting with mm-hmm. a form.
Yeah, no, that's, I like that. That the, all of what has made you what you are is coming through in that expression.
And so you'll just naturally see the world differently from somebody, you know, one cushion over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. What a wonderful question. I think it's one of the roots of this entire practice, I think, really. It's making me think of... I've just started reading this commentary on some of Vasubandhu's work, and I'm only a couple pages in, but there's something that I picked up that I think hopefully can help you with this, because it, you know, really shook me up. Where the commentator said that one of the amazing things about Buddhism is that for all of its ancient history, for how long it's been around, there really isn't much of many examples of people completely rejecting what someone else had said before, like crossing it out and saying, no, not that, do this instead. Mm. That for the most part, for the vast most part, it's people adding, saying yes and, or this is another way to say what Buddha was trying to say at the beginning.
Ah. Mm-hmm.
You know, like
yeah.
The forms we're doing in Zen is mm-hmm. not the way that Shakyamuni Buddha did it in India. But it's another way of trying to do mm-hmm. what he was doing.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I just, like, and that really shook me up because it's made me think immediately of that line from Fukan Zengi, that when Dharma fills your body and mind, you realize that something's missing. That creativity, I think, is really at the root of what we're doing.
You mm-hmm. know? Okay.
That's part of the practice to be like, is to. To be in the form and say how is this form showing up right now authentically, you know, what is it right now, because everything is always changing. So that's part of the responsibility of the practice, is mm-hmm. to be creative as an expression of it so that it's alive.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
I think holding the forms with reverence, but not gripping them tightly,
right,
is great. Because one example from my own life is that when right after I took Jukai, I like added three lines that I just made up to the rope chant because I thought it was insufficient. There's three other things that I really want to say before I wrote the song. And then was important to me for like the first couple weeks. And then after I started putting it on more and more, and I would finish the rope chain, I was like, I don't think I really feel like I need to say anything else. You know? And so it wasn't like I was doing it right before, and or doing it right now, I was doing it wrong before. It's like you're kind of surfing with the forms.
Yeah, and that's an example of you're taking, you're being creative with it. You're playing with it a little bit. You're making it yours. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I like that. Yes.
So, I come from a very pagan background, so it's all chaos all the time. So, what is duty? You use the word duty.
Duty? What is duty?
Yes.
Well, in my mind, I mean duty. You know, it probably has to do with my upbringing. I had chores as a kid. There were responsibilities. It was a religious background. But then now, it's like with my, I feel a responsibility to my practice. You know, I feel I have a duty to be there and to show up, to be predictable.
Is it behavior? Is it emotion? Is it an emotion? Duty?
Duty?
It's behavior.
It's behavior. It's behavior.
Series of actions.
Right.
In sequence.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like the practices, in a way. Like these practices. And you can express yourself within them. And I think sometimes, you know, it's when you lose that, you begin to feel stale. You know.
You lose what?
That you're expressing yourself within them. The expression of yourself, maybe that's the creative piece.
Say more about losing it. I'm not sure I'm following that part.
Occasionally, you know, to maybe when I'm overbooked or too tired or something or...
going through the motions.
Yeah, then it's kind of like, okay, you do this, and then you do that, and then you do this, and then it's like there's no creativity there, you know. And so to work to get that back, you know, is some of the thing I'm juggling some of the time.
What would happen if you abandoned your practice?
Well, I don't feel it's time to do that. Eventually, I probably will leave the practice, but I don't feel it's time to do that. But I'm not sure I understand your question.
In my trades, it's common for men to just walk away from their obligations.
Huh.
Yeah. So it's interesting to me to hear your sense of obligation to your practice. So I see it as an abstraction in a way.
Well, it is an important part of my life, and I feel like it's a meaningful part of my life, and it's a place where I feel like I'm practicing. You know, this as well. Eventually, I will retire, not for a while. And, you know, maybe for me, some of it is thinking about other ways to be creative, you know, to change, shift away from that.
Desire, yeah.
I was going to say, it seems like you are implying that when you feel the most creative is when you really are the most present.
Yes.
And the most engaged.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely. Yeah.
At times when you're distracted, you're not as present, and you don't feel as creative, and you don't feel as engaged.
Yeah. If you're overtired, you know, hungry.
Angry, lonely.
Just want to go home. Yes.
Thirsty. I've been feeling a lot recently that, with regard to like obligation, should I do this, should I not do this, especially with the practice in terms of the Dharma. I think it's just because I've been reading a lot of Rinzai's stuff, and he talks a lot about confidence. I feel that there's a certain unknowable but very potent feeling of confidence.
negatively, but just a sort of almost even unsayable security in what you're doing. I feel it develops, and it's like an intuition, so you just sort of intuit what is not correct, I guess, and natural. It kind of builds on itself, I feel like. And so I feel sometimes you don't even have to ask yourself, should I do this, or should I do it, or should I not? Because there's a certain intuition involved, and you become very secure, I guess, in what you think about something and what you've learned, to recite it that way. It reminds me of listening to all these podcasts recently, but on one of them they were talking about someone who was like an Arctic rescue of people, and there was an interview that they were doing with them. They asked, why do you do it? Like, why do you go save these people in the Arctic? And they said, it's the only thing that makes sense. That was really profound to me. Like, you find something that just
makes sense to you.
Makes sense, like nothing else, in a way that nothing else does.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like in that way, we're sort of like water running down the side of a boulder. You kind of just find your way, you know? And not all of the drops go the same way, some of them do. And there's a stickiness to it, but like once you find a path that is really direct, you go that way. But yeah, there's a certain gravity to it. At least I've been feeling that way recently. It's quelled a lot of this just endless doubt and back and forth.
Yeah, which has to do with listening to yourself, or kind of bringing your own creative expression to your choices.
So, about 3 weeks ago or so, my family got a new puppy. And if you ever want a disruption of routines, a 12-week-old puppy
will do it.
Will disrupt your routines. And I've been like the stay-at-home puppy dad for the past 3 weeks. And it's really interesting. Everything is new for her, of course, even if it's the same thing that she's doing over and over again. The backyard. Oh, it's just the backyard. For her, it's like, oh my gosh. And it's been really fun watching her, I don't know, eat flowers and over and over again. And at the same time, it's really interesting. Part of it, of course, is trying to set parameters, routines, etc., with the puppy. And, of course, the puppy is setting those with us, too.
Right.
And just the past couple of days, she's been digging this hole in the yard by the front gate, and which she probably shouldn't do when she gets all dirty and muddy. But she loves digging her hole. And so I'm like, well, what do I do? And she's so happy and proud. And it's like, I don't want to brag on my puppy, it's a pretty awesome hole. It's like, she's not a big puppy. It's like a serious hole. And so, you know, so like, at what point do I like, no, don't dig the hole? But she's having so much fun digging the hole, you know? And I think we all have to do that too, right? You know, at what point do you... there's the opposite sometimes. If you let all your desires and creativity and energy, you need those forms, you need those things to contain it. But there's always that tension about at what point is containing it limiting it, at what point should you run around the backyard and dig your hole.
Yeah, no, I like that. Yeah, I like that. Yeah, there is something important about routine and you know, and having things that are meaningful in your life that are the form, you know, that you work within over and over. Yeah, and how to let yourself dig a hole once in a while.
I want to respond to the idea of creativity because I think it has become a value in our society, and I think a lot about the concept and what it is, and at its best, I think that it makes us participants in the activity of creation, the larger design of creation. But it irks me also how commercialized creativity has become. There is the Google feature where you can track how often, how many times a word has been used over the last few decades, and creativity in the 90s is like spikes in terms of like mentions and titles. And culturally, it's interesting to see how different cultures think about creativity. In the No theater of Japan, which I imagine most of you must be familiar with because it's heavily influenced by Zen thought, the goal of the actor is to perform, to learn one or two characters that consists, are a bundle of forms that are inherited generation after generation, and there are these long lineages of actors. And whereas here in the West, we value the imprint, like putting our mark or our seal on a character and spinning it in a certain way. In No and other non-Western performance traditions, there's this continuity, being part of this pattern and activity of creation, but through continuity. And there's this anecdote of a famous No actor who one day performed this role, and at the end his student came to him and said, "Master, I was watching, and today you were dancing with the gods. In this particular moment, what were you thinking? What were you expressing?" And the master said, "I was thinking about where I had to put my left foot next." So a different way of thinking about forms and how to express the pattern of creation.
Yeah, that's neat. But he was being led by something internally in terms of figuring out where the left foot would go.
Right. Oh. Getting close to the end.
Okay.
Yeah. We have time for one.
Well, just going off of that, I occasionally write poetry, not so much as I used to, and I hate writing form poems, like sonnets, sestinas, you know, haiku, that sort of thing. I don't really enjoy reading them. I definitely don't enjoy writing them. But I find that it's really good for me. That having a really tight structure and having my freedom limited helps me be more creative and come up with unique expressions that surprise myself. And that's really sometimes where you can get just these amazing phrases, and you're like, I have to use a word that rhymes with whatever, and I really want to use this other word that doesn't rhyme, but I have to come up with a synonym that rhymes, and then you hit on something more novel than what I had wanted to write that didn't fit before. So then maybe you borrow a phrase and then you write a non-form poem off of a phrase. But it took the form to like draw that creativity.
And maybe you went further with the creativity because you had the form.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, my example is always J.S. Bach. He just followed the forms of the two, a T, and was the most creative.
Look how that turned out. Right.
Within the tightest following of the forms, it's magnificent.
Thank you. Well, thank you.